Well, let's look at the post-war activities. The war, when the war ended, as we said earlier, a lot of things changed. Demand stopped for a number of items.
Right.
And what happened in PTS at that in that post-war period?
Well, that was before we had really began to grow very much. We had the problem of transition, of course, like everybody did, from war products to non-war products. And everybody had done a certain amount of so-called post-war planning, but not many people had really reached the point where there was any production going on that basis. So our growth was slow at that period. Matter of fact, gave us time to write books and things like that. and really began to pick up about 1947-48.
You had polio in 1950, and I indicated to you on the phone that we shared something in common. I was wondering if you wanted to talk about your experiences with that.
Yeah. This town, one of the interesting things about this town is that a high percentage of people travel a lot. It's a pretty worldly town in spite of its insular kind of location. People do travel a lot, and so there's a lot of exposure. And it happened that a number of the people that were traveling came down with something that resembled polio. As a matter of fact, at a peak, there I think were 133 cases in town, which is quite a lot for a town of its size. And a number of deaths, a number of cases of people that had to be on artificial respiration. What do you call it, pulmonary or...
We call them iron lungs.
Iron lungs, right, iron lungs. I went hunting, deer hunting. This would be right around Thanksgiving time, and the weather is cold and drizzle, bad, poor weather in Michigan at that time of the year, usually. Anyway, I don't think we had any luck. This would be deer hunting. I don't think we had any luck, but I came back with what amounted to a cold, chills, and all that goes with it. And we had a very close friend who was our family doctor, and he came over to see me. At that time, they were making house calls even. He came over to see me and couldn't figure out what the problem was. Didn't seem to be a typical case of flu, or just a cold, but a little more complicated than that, and didn't know what to do about it. Just kept me on under surveillance here for a while. But after a period of several days and no improvement, he decided we'd go to the hospital and take some tests. Among other things, by this time, the polio epidemic was in full bloom. And went to the hospital and decided to do a spinal tap. And I could tell from the way he did it that he had very little experience. This was, his preparation was extensive. I've had him subsequently at Ford Hospital and he just zip bang and that's it. But anyway, this spinal tap showed presence of polio, and so they immediately wanted to get me out of the hospital. I was persona non grata there, and we have in Pontiac, Michigan, I had at that time in Pontiac, Michigan, a polio clinic, Sister Kenny Clinic. I was taken right down there by ambulance. and immediately put into their hot pack. Are you familiar? I think you're familiar with their program, aren't you? General program of hot pack and hot packs and exercise.
Mm-hmm.
And very hot woolen blankets, that sort of thing. I had some muscular disability, not a lot, but generally it was just a plain malaise and run down and just felt plain lousy all the time. Well, down there, I was exposed to these hot packs and the subsequent exercise that you go through after you're completely relaxed with the hot packs. We had a little doctor, I can't remember her name now, but who ran the clinic, and she was just expert at taking big husky fellows and giving them these exercises that strengthen, lengthen the muscles and do all that sort of thing. Well, after about 3 days of hot packs, I began to develop very, very painful skin problems. And as this went on, they called in a dermatologist and tried all the regular treatments. Of course, this is long before steroids and things like that that are so effective with skin treatments these days. And they tried everything they could, but more and more skin kept coming off. I mean, this is almost complete defoliation, where I'd go to sleep one night and the next morning the problem was how do you peel off the sheets? They were just one big pool of serum, and it was a pretty messy situation. I didn't care much whether the school kept or not. Well, that went on for quite a while. We finally got that under reasonable control, and we came back home one day, and I stayed in our bedroom, which apparently we thought must have been some fungus or something around that could activate the skin problem again, and boy, I was right back in the same jam. Well, then I went back to Ford Hospital, to their dermatology department there. Dr. Menaw was the real old-timer there that knew his business, but they had all the old-fashioned systems for treating dermatological cases. None of the new ones that are now available were just barely becoming available, and they were so concerned about them, they didn't want to try them on anything as radical as this case was. Anyway, to make a long story short, I spent practically all the next year from Thanksgiving. Well, I finally got back to work about Thanksgiving of the following year. And during that time, I spent most of it either in Henry Ford Hospital or in their recovery, what would you call it, a guest house out in the hills near Pontiac. Beautiful place. But it was just a real terrible ordeal. I came back, and instead of living here, I lived with my mother in Alma. And when I could, I drove back and forth here. But the fine thing about the whole thing, as far as I was concerned, is that Dow supported this all the way through. Never was there any question about cutting off my salary or releasing me or anything like that. They just carried right on. Of course, I had very good help in Plastics Technical Service, although one of my closest supporters was involved in this polio epidemic too. It seemed to hit some certain organs. Now, in my case, the skin organ was the one that really got it. Next fellow would be the liver, or next person would be a stomach or something like that. It was a very unusual kind of thing. Of course, along with that, muscular dystrophy and all that really messed things up. But I've just had to be very careful with skin problems ever since. It's just been a continual nightmare to keep out of trouble.
Did you receive that article that I sent on Sister?
Yeah, I have it right here.
Okay.
Yeah, I enjoyed that. As a matter of fact, I recognize having read it. We take Smithsonian, and I recognize after you sent it out, I appreciated receiving it. Boy, that was a pretty effective treatment. It sure helped a lot of people. When I arrived in the Cystic Clinic, there were 27 patients down there that were from Midland.
Really?
Yeah. And from Husky football players to babies. It was really a pretty much an epidemic in this town. And we've laid it pretty much on the fact that people traveled so much. Got out. There are two things that are run down from quite a lot of traveling. As you probably know, that can wear you down. But in addition to that, bringing in all sorts of problems from the outer world.
I had an aunt who had polio about the same time. She was at Palm Springs, Georgia, where Roosevelt was
down. Sure.
And in my own case, I just stayed at home and for a year. And,
Is that what you did?
And once a week, I was taken to Children's Hospital and received Sister Kenny treatment every week.
And hot blankets and exercise?
Mostly the exercise. That's what I remember, at least.
Mm-hmm. And, how old were you at the time?
Seven.
Mm-hmm.
And then one day the doctor came in and said, "You're going to walk." And he got me up. My mother was on one side and I was on the other, and that's how it started.
Did you have any permanent impairments?
I have bad legs. I do a lot of walking, but I still have weak ankles and bad knees and so on. I still get around all right. That's all I care about. And there, too, I was growing up in Akron, Ohio.
In Akron, Ohio? My wife's from Akron, Ohio.
Oh, really?
Yeah.
We lived in Barberton.
Yeah.
Just outside of Akron. And that's the Children's Hospital, was the one in Akron that I used to
go. Yeah. Say, we have reservations at the club for lunch.
Oh, okay.
About now, what's your desire?
I have, in 1954, you received an honorary degree from Alma.
Yeah, Alma. Yeah, Prof. Clack, who I mentioned before, kept pretty close track of some of his students, and that included me. And he knew about what we'd done in the way of the German plastics escapade, as well as some of the work that I'd done earlier and the fact that we were getting along pretty well with an organization in Midland and Dow. And so he, I believe, instigated the honorary doctor's degree for me for that reason and for, I guess, other reasons too, not all of which I'm aware of. Anyway, I was very pleased to have been a recipient of it, and it worked out pretty well all the way along the line.
In 59, you became general manager of the plastics department. I'm trying to keep, again, my title sorted here. The PTS existed from 47.
PTS existed from about 43, okay, which started as Plastic Development Technical Service. Carried right on through, not only to 59, but beyond that, by fellows that were my assistants. And the PTS reported to the plastics department. Plastics department, line-wise, was a relatively small organization. It consisted of Ray Bounty and a number of people that he felt were key people in coalescing and pulling together the total interests of plastics, but not on a solid military line basis. This became pretty much the order of starting of the NDO.
Okay.
multidimensional organization or matrix organization, if you will. Reporting to Ray Bounty's operation on a line basis was the Plastics Technical Service and Coatings Technical Service, and certain research facilities. Bounty's philosophy, and he'll have to tell you this himself, but was pretty much that if you control the development and technical service of a product line, you've got a pretty good control on the whole affair. You can control the new developments as they come along. You've got a good control on the total potential of the business. And it was, he made it his responsibility to see that the business aspect of plastics was taken care of by fellows in his department. They were essentially businessmen. And as such, he developed then this philosophy of what amounts to a matrix kind of an organization, with not line responsibilities but dotted line responsibilities. And it was clear that this would work because he was given the authority by Dr. Dow. I don't know how he'll handle answering this question to you, but I think that'll be the way it works out. He reports to the top brass of the company, the manager of the plastics department was essentially the equivalent of a vice president in any other organization, and reported directly to the top management, the president, the executive vice president of the company.
What, when you took this over in 59, did you follow Ray?
No, I followed Ben Branch.
Okay.
Ben Branch followed Ray. And Ben was in that job for I don't exactly remember when Ray moved out of it to become director of research. But it would have been, Ben would have been in the job 4 or 5 years. So it might have been 55, 53, 54, someplace along there.
Now, you said that you hinted at the origins of MDO.
Are beginning to materialize here.
That's now, is Ray responsible for those early embryonic stages?
Ray is, yes. Yes, Ray is more responsible for attempting to run a business like the plastics business at Dow without having full-line responsibility for manufacturing. Such was historically true in the past. In the past, the manufacturing operations in Dow were the key operations. Sales was sort of subservient to it. You know, you sell what we can make. That kind of thing.
Okay. Do you want to stop and get some more water?
Yeah, I'm going to.
Okay. Now, I understand that somewhere after 59, when you became manager of the plastics department, that you undertook reorganization, which eventually led to the interest from the Harvard Business School. And I'm not sure the dates there, but could you tell me about that?
Well, I attempted to further what Ray Bounty had started, and which become essentially the start of a department that controlled the business through logistics and financial information and that kind of thing. It was the intelligence center for plastic materials at Dow. Not too long after becoming head of plastics, we were asked by a couple of researchers from Harvard Lawrence and Lorsch, if they could come out and talk to us about the way we ran the operation. And it turned out that what they were doing was a study of a number of companies and the way they ran their plastics operations. I don't know who the others were. They didn't make those things public, that information public. But we said, sure, come on out, we'll talk to you about it. We were glad to talk to them about it and get their ideas. They had good ideas, too. And they studied this organization and the way it operated from an academic standpoint, published later a book or two on the kind of an operation that they're talking about integration versus differentiation, the kind of organization that they were talking about. Is it pulled together in an integrated department, or is it a differentiated department, or is it someplace in between? Now, this was sort of a combination of both, actually. They found it quite intriguing, and it was very effective. It worked out very well. We had a thriving business in plastics, growing at a good rate per year of expansion, with good profitability, and it was a going operation, no question about that.
What were your major products during that period?
Well, our major products were styron, saran, ethyl cellulose, saran film, styrofoam, plastic lined pipe, epoxy resins, latexes, monomers, big in the business of monomers, and so on, that line.
It just dawned on me that I had forgotten another question I wanted to ask you before we left the Plastic Technical Service. How big was that staff when you left there? You only started out with a handful of people.
I'm sure, I don't have exact figures, but I'm sure that by the time I left, it was, Plastics and Coatings Technical Service was at least 200. So it had grown rapidly throughout those years, and this was another one of Bounty's premises, that we operate within a certain percentage of sales. I don't recall what it was, but something like 1.5% of sales was the limit, our limit of expansion. We couldn't go beyond that. And we stayed within it and grew within that, within those bounds and meets.
And what about the physical facilities? Were you brought together in one place then?
They're all brought together in one place in a very extensive laboratory for fabrication of plastics, plastic products, and making of films, making of everything. Well, not long after that, we started into the fiber business because of Dow's interest in possibly going into the textile fiber manufacturing business. At any rate, they were very extensive, the most extensive in the industry, and it was quite an attraction for our competitors to see what they could of what we had, which we were quite pleased to be able to show them, because if we could interest them in spending their money and investing in this sort of thing to promote the total plastics industry, then their expenses would be more like ours, and obviously we'd do the whole industry good, as well as probably not damaging ourselves too much.
And did others pick up on this?
Yes. Yes, others did. DuPont was very active at picking it up. Carbide, to some extent. Let's see, General Electric was quite interested. But we had them all out to visit us. And, I mean, they asked to come, and we welcomed them, showed them around, showed them the whole setup, showed them what we're doing, money we're spending, encouraged them to get into the thing in the same way.
I think you had an article in Chemical Engineering News, did you not?
Yes.
Describe that also.
Yes, right.
Did you get much response from that?
Yes, we had a lot of response from it, both the United States and abroad.
Oh. Where abroad were you?
BASF.
Okay.
That time we were doing quite a lot of traveling, too, so that we were becoming known abroad.
Mm-hmm.
In Germany at first, France, England to quite an extent, with ICI, and then later with Asahi and others in Japan.
Now, somewhere in this period, I'm moving back now to when you went into plastics department. Somewhere in that period, you were asked by Ted Doan to organize Dow's general chemical business.
No, that's not quite right.
Okay.
I was asked by Ted Doan, would I show him how we were organized so that he could organize the chemical business. He was my counterpart in chemicals.
I see.
And so he had watched what we were doing in plastics and became interested in doing the same thing for chemicals. So he came over and we went through the whole ball of wax about how we were organized, what we were doing, and he then proceeded to reorganize chemicals on that same kind of a basis.
Then I'm interested in how you said you were the first person to go to Harvard's Advanced Management Program. How did that election come about? How was that decision made?
There were two schools of thought at Dow at the time. One is that this Advanced Management Program business is a lot of malarkey. And that's largely sponsored by Ben Branch and a few people like that. And Ted Doan's philosophy was quite the opposite. He felt there was a fair amount of good to be learned or be obtained by attending those things, and was worth an experimental trial. I was not the first to go to Harvard. There was a chap that went for the program management, PMD, the program management development, ahead of me, but no one had gone to the AMP at that time, and Ted asked me if I'd be interested in going, and I jumped at the chance to get some more education, and was very enthused about the possibility of going, and frankly did enjoy it. He was interested enough so that he came out while I was there to monitor the program, and got a big kick out of that.